Stay tuned for Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah, featuring two film critics with distinctly different tastes in movies, Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net. He thinks her tastes are shallow. She thinks his are pretentious. Listen in as they discuss and debate new releases and other film-related topics. Let the clash begin.
Hello and welcome to the Cinema Clash. I am Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com.
And I'm Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net.
And it's another big week. We have another Marvel movie to talk about and a Marvel movie that is blowing up social media and is about to break all these financial records, Black Panther.
It's crazy how big this movie is blowing up.
And just on its heels, which will make just probably slight, a little bit less money, is the new claymation Early Man.
Yes, it will make slightly less, I think.
And then we're going to discuss the documentary short films nominated for Academy Awards, and you're going to follow it up with something unique.
Yes.
You saw. I'm not going to tell the audience what it is, because even I'm not sure what it is, but you saw something unique this week, and you're going to tell us about it.
Yes, that's the tease.
All right, well, first, tell us what we're drinking tonight.
So you picked the original Smoking Loon Pinot Noir.
I really like this, art. It's actually a loon smoking a cigar.
So the loon is that affiliated with one of these movies?
This has nothing to do with anything.
Oh.
Just a bottle I happen to have. I was trying to connect it to, well, maybe all the Doc shorts were just kind of out there, so they're like a smoking loon, or there was the messenger bird and Early Man.
Oh,
but no, I can't connect this to anything.
That is a loony attempt at a connection there. Sorry.
All right, well, let's start with the biggest film, probably of the first 6 months of the year, Black Panther. We've seen him before. He was in Captain America Civil War, where we first met him. But now we really get to know King T'Challa, played by Chadwick Boseman. And Chadwick Boseman plays them all. He played James Brown, he played Jackie Robinson, he played Thurgood Marshall, who we just saw a couple months ago, and now he's King T'Challa. What is unique about Black Panther?
Well, I don't know what makes it unique. It's very good. And so I guess from all the buzz out there, what makes it unique is that it is a predominantly African-American cast. It's made by an African-American director, and it's just really good, and it's centered on an African nation, and so from a cultural perspective, it's got some unique aspects to it. But beyond the unique aspects, it's just a solid, really good Marvel superhero movie.
You know, a lot of people say, you know, the first black superhero. Well, he's not.
No.
He's probably the first one who's really taken seriously. But there was Blade, and there was Catwoman, and there was even Will Smith's Hancock. But this is, you know, a lot of people back there were saying, I want to go see the Will Smith movie. No one's saying, I want to see the new Chadwick Boseman movie. No, I want to see Black Panther. And this guy, other than the ones I just mentioned, was born and raised in Africa. He's of Africa. He's a king of a city-state called Wakanda. And Wakanda makes all the technology of America, China, and Russia look like kid stuff. They are far more advanced than anyone else because of their specific geography, and they have chosen to keep it to themselves, to remain isolated. They don't want to get involved in the world. And that, what I thought, was one of the more interesting parts of Black Panther. It took me back to my master's in international relations, isolationism versus activism, and they have this, I don't know, tense argument in their country. Some people want to help the rest of the world. They want to help the refugees in Africa, and one of them is actually fighting Boko Haram in the beginning.
Oh, right.
And other people want to remain hidden, because if we open our borders and we open ourselves up to the world, guess what? We inherit the world's problems, and Wakanda is no longer the Wakanda we know. So on that part of it, I really liked it.
Yeah, no, and it has some, I mean, Black Panther's a really cool guy, and he's surrounded by some really cool kick-ass chicks.
Mm.
And I think that also is a big part of the draw of this movie, that it's going to get a lot of women are going to like it, but the guys are going to like it, the fanboys are going to like it. It is still, though, a sci-fi superhero movie, so I still am a little wary of like trying to get people to go see this film if they don't like the genre, because I just think it really is still primarily a really good film for fans of these movies, of the Avengers movies, and so it's a really good one. But is it better for some people than some of these other like Oscar-nominated movies that they might have missed that are out there that are your more standard dramas? Not necessarily. You have to be into this type of movie, and if you are, you're going to be very happy with it.
I also liked the bad guy's kind of his motivation, what he wanted to achieve. He has a terrible name, Eric Killmonger.
Yeah, I love that name.
Eric Killmonger, and he's played by Michael B. Jordan, and he is
Woo-hoo.
Michael B. Jordan is a Ryan Coogler. Ryan Coogler wrote and directed Black Panther. He's a Ryan Coogler favorite. He was Fruitvale Station. He was Creed. So now he is here as Eric Killmonger, and what he wants is he wants to take this futuristic technology of Wakanda and give it to the world's 2 billion black people. And they are going to flip the world order and take over the world and say, and his cause celebre is vengeance for the oppressed. And what a, that's an interesting idea. And that's not really fully explored. There's a speech or two about it as, you know, people are fighting. Why are you doing this? And what is your goal? And he gets into that. If that, if they would have dove into that, because it starts out in 1992 Oakland as the crack epidemic is starting to tear apart cities. And it's like, that could have gone somewhere.
But, well, but they really couldn't take it anywhere further because they had too many other subplots involving this character that that you had to wait for. So when you look at the big picture, because we don't want to spoil anything, but there's additional motivations involved with him wanting to take over as king of Wakanda and challenge T'Challa for the throne. And the other good villain in this, I mean, what I love is this is a multicultural ensemble. So while you have just an amazing cast of African-Americans, you've got, aside from Chadwick Boseman, who's just always been really good in everything, I think.
Except Gods of Egypt. That's terrible.
Yeah, that Gods of Egypt was pretty bad. But Michael B. Jordan and Lupita Nyong'o, you know, my goodness. And two standouts in this one, Danai Gurira, who's in, Danai, I think is her name, is in The Walking Dead. She's like the leader of this all-female.
You don't want to mess with her.
Special forces group. And then Letitia Wright is plays the sister, the princess. And she is also just, she has those great lines. But then
she has my favorite line of the movie.
She does.
I don't know if I want to give that away.
No, don't give it away.
It's so
but
good.
You have Andy Serkis from Planet of the Apes who comes in as Ulysses Klaw, one of the villains. So you it's not like it's strictly, you do have a few white actors
There's
thrown
two.
Into the mix. There's two. There's
him and Martin Freeman.
Martin Freeman, who I was like, isn't that the guy from The Hobbit?
Well, I noticed that. And see, tell me if you agree or if I'm just off base here. There are two white actors in the film. One plays like the government CIA guy, and one plays like the really bad kind of one of the first villain. And it looks like they're in the roles usually reserved for minorities and regular, like, say, a Thor film or a Wolverine film. That's where you would see the African-American characters. And here, the entire class is black, and these guys are in the roles usually reserved for them.
Yeah, and what makes this movie great, though, is you don't overthink it. You don't really think about whether or not. Like, to me, it's just good, and it's a good cast, and it's a good story. It holds together really well. And I look for what I love about some of these sort of origin story standalone kind of movies is that you learn about these characters and then you appreciate them so much more when they're all put together in the Avengers movies and they stay in their own individual characters but play off of each other. And so I really can't wait to see in the next Avengers Infinity War how Black Panther really coexists alongside your Thor, Hulk, Iron Man.
That's going to be a challenge because the main Avengers always dominate the story. Captain America and Iron Man, they dominate the story. And now you're going to have this really interesting character, Black Panther, kind of be relegated to the Doctor Strange tier.
Yes, but at least there's more building blocks to sort of take it a little further if they want to. It's not like Infinity War is the last of the Avengers movies we're going to see in the next 10 years. So who knows? It also has opened the door. Obviously, it's going to do so incredibly well that we will see another standalone Black Panther movie which can't be too far down the pike. But the real challenge is making sure that all of these stories manage to stay within the mythology that's been built. The same way that this one takes place immediately, the events immediately follow what we saw in Captain America Civil War. And so it helps to have sort of seen that one first. It kind of laid the groundwork. You don't have to have seen it. But if you know and appreciate the Marvel Cinematic Universe, then this is another really good piece of the puzzle. And it's a fun watch. And I'm glad to see it doing so well in its opening weekend.
It was fun. And it has a great soundtrack album to go with it by Kendrick Lamar. You should check that out. All right, our next film is now for something completely different.
Yes.
It's an Aardman Animations. You might not know the name Aardman, but you know their films. If you've ever seen any of the Wallace and Gromit stories, or Chicken Run, or Shaun the Sheep. I love Shaun the Sheep.
I know you do.
And it's directed by Nick Park, and he's walking into this with 4 Oscars, because Wallace and Gromit always win Oscars. It's what they do. Claymation takes years and years and years to make, so that's why you don't see too many of them. And the story behind this one is flimsy. It's really silly. It more than comedy is what it is. About 5,000 years ago, somebody invented bronze. They figured it out. So that's just going to change the world. But, you know, bronze started somewhere and had to migrate. It didn't start everywhere. And so we meet a Stone Age tribe who hasn't, you know, bronze hasn't reached them yet. They're still hunting bunny rabbits, and they're not the sharpest tip of the spear.
Not the sharpest tools in the shed.
One day, the Bronze Age rolls into their forest, kick them out into the volcanic badlands. They're going to build some mines, and Doug, Plucky Doug, voiced by Eddie Redmayne, has to save his tribe. And to do that, he's going to challenge the Bronze Age baddies to their favorite game, which is soccer. So it takes years to make Claymation. Hannah, why would they attach it to such a flimsy story?
It's a simple story. It's one of those harmless animated movies that it will appeal to the European soccer fans. I mean, this is a British. That, you know, it's important to note that
British.
These voiceovers, it's like Tom Hiddleston as like the head of the bronze.
He's playing a Frenchman
guy. And then you've got Eddie Redmayne, who I do love from Les Mis and Fantastic Beasts, and you know. Just a Danish girl.
Theory of Everything.
Theory of Everything. I mean, he's a really versatile, good actor, and he has fun with this one. But it has a British sensibility, and it's not soccer in this film. It is football, as the Europeans would refer to it. And it has some fun moments. It's supposed to take place somewhere, you know, near present-day Manchester. So, you know, you've got a lot of plays on the soccer terminology. You've got the Real Bronzia team playing these Stone Age guys, and they make a joke about Manchester being united.
That's funny. That's the best joke in the movie.
It was. And so it was silly.
It's so forgettable.
It is
like,
totally forgettable.
I really have to struggle to remember what was going on in that movie.
It's kind of like if you had like a Flintstones episode set in England and a soccer game breaks out, and that's really what this is. And you had like Barney Rubble's team versus Fred Flintstone's team. It is silly, but it's just one of those ones where no harm, no foul. Oh, I guess.
I noticed they had humans and dinosaurs living together at the same time. So that's one. I don't know if that's a knock
around
or just
lunchtime.
A thing,
but, I think they said.
Because the asteroid that strikes Earth and wipes out the dinosaurs actually becomes the first soccer ball when it cools off, which is, all right, that's funny. Lord Nuth, the bad guy voiced by Tom Hiddleston, he's played with an outrageous French accent. And the girls will like it because Maisie Williams, the girl from Game of Thrones, she voices Guna, who is a really, really good soccer player, but she's not allowed to play soccer because she's a girl. No girls allowed. So there's that, kind of feminist sub-scene
going on.
Gee,
I hope she gets into the game somehow, Charlie.
Yeah, I wonder if she'll join the Stone Age underdogs.
Do you think? So, but that's just it, is there's nothing. There's just nothing to really...
Right, there's nothing to it.
There's nothing to it, but at the same time, it's one of those ones that if your kids are into soccer, and if you're an adult who's into soccer, then it's an easy... It's just a silly, easy watch. It's got some British whimsy to it, and it doesn't, it's not painful for the adults to watch.
It's fascinating, like Shaun the Sheep, which had no words at all because they're sheep and they don't talk, is so much better than this. It's
not for a
really
little kid.
Good.
No, and but Shaun the Sheep
like the Box Trolls, remember the Box Trolls? That was a really good claymation film.
Yeah, but this one I think is good for, I mean, I just think you have to look at it as one of those rare ones that is just very simple and basic so that the littlest kids can kind of follow it. And so I know your kid didn't seem terribly impressed.
He was not the biggest fan of this movie. But, you know, that's fine.
Yeah, but he didn't hate it, right? I mean, he just kind of...
He liked it more than Ferdinand. He really did not like Ferdinand.
Well, see, and I actually kind of put this on par with Ferdinand. I think it's, again, just basic, simple... forgettable. I couldn't remember. You mentioned the girl's name. I'm like, other than Doug, the voiced by Eddie Redmayne.
Yeah, you remember Hognob.
And Hognob mentioned Warthog mentioning or something. Yeah. But other than that, I could not recall
you can't really tell
a single I couldn't recall a single name in this thing. I just remembered more of like the little jokes and the play on. There's just lots of plays on words.
They have like the first sportscasters.
Yeah.
That's Rob Brydon, by the way.
So that part's fun, but yeah, it's it can certainly wait. Or on demand or catching it in DVD.
I'd say go see Peter Rabbit.
I don't know. I think it's a good alternative for smaller kids who might not be into Peter Rabbit. But yeah, I mean, it's you rank them all. Or if you've already seen Peter Rabbit and you're looking for some other movie to go to, then I think this one's just fine.
All right, we're going to talk about the documentary shorts next. And we haven't melded minds yet. We haven't shared our opinion, so I want to give you a little test.
Uh-oh.
So there's 5 documentary shorts, and overall, I was very unimpressed. I wasn't too happy with them, except for 2 of them really stand out. One of them is just the clear, awesomest winner. I loved it. One is a good, strong runner-up. I wonder if you can identify what 2 I'm thinking about.
Well, the 2 that I think have the best shot in the current environment...
Are you talking about shot or the best?
That's
different.
It's different, but like you, none of them blew me away. Last year, I liked all 5, and they were very different and unique and just powerful stories. And this one, this year, I'm like, none of them, not a single one of them jumped out at me as just like a great short documentary. But the ones that, Traffic Stop was very interesting, and Heroin are the... They're the 2 that I think have current, just some underlying currency in the world today or in the U.S. today that maybe kind of help give them an edge.
By far, my favorite, number 1, which I think should win, maybe will win, is Heroin.
Yeah.
Heroin is outstanding. And you can watch it now, folks. You can turn on Netflix right now. It's a Netflix original. So that's probably the only one you can actually watch right now. And it is about hunting in West Virginia and how it is pretty much the opioid overdose capital of the United States by a long shot. And Heroin, which is a play on words, heroin the drug, which is killing people, and parentheses E, heroin for woman, is about 3 women. It's about the deputy fire chief, who is, you know, first on the scene to try to save the lives of the overdose victims. It's about the drug court judge, who knows these drug addicts personally on a one-on-one basis and sees them when they relapse and has to lock them up for 24 hours for lying to the parole officer. And it's about the brown bag ministry lady who drives around at night looking for prostitutes to give them a sandwich and like a bite of scripture. It's fascinating. You feel so bad. I felt like a punch in the gut. Watching it, I don't have any really experience with this current opioid epidemic, which is sweeping the nation and affects a lot of people. I don't have any personal experience, and this one drives it home.
Well, that's why I do think it has the edge, is because it's so timely. I had seen, though, and I think what took some of the mystery away for me is that I'd seen a whole segment on Meet the Press with the fire chief. And so she was on Meet the Press a few months ago talking about the opioid epidemic, and they were promoting this documentary because it actually headlined this new Meet the Press documentary festival that actually premiered this year, and this was their headlining film. And so I was familiar with her, and I remember just being in awe of what she was doing single-handedly in this community, sort of fighting for the use of Narcan to save overdose victims.
I can't believe that's controversial.
Right. But you could tell they injected where there were some officers that didn't really care to use it and learn how to use it or save people.
It's almost like they want these guys to die.
Exactly. It was sort of like, well, you know, they're sort of a drag on humanity and just let them go. Whereas she was, by showing the drug court judge and the missionary and the fire chief, they are saying, look, you got to look beyond just the crime scene or the overdose scene and realize the personal stories and the struggles. And, you know, you see how one person, how one man is saved and how he turns his life around. And he's so grateful to the judge and to the fire chief. And so I think I agree with you that if I had to pick one of these five, based on all of that, I do think it's the one that most people would benefit from trying to see.
And it's one of the most people can see because it's already out.
Yeah.
The strong runner-up, which I just really got a kick out of and I liked, was Knife Skills.
I knew you would.
Knife Skills is about a restaurant opening in Cleveland, Ohio, that only hires ex-cons, people like out of long-term prison, 10, 11 years in for drug trafficking and armed robbery. And they have a French chef in a six-month program, and they're training these guys to cook classic French, really complicated meals, and teaching them these French words about French wine and how to run a restaurant. And they're opening the restaurant in like 6 weeks, and you're like, this will never succeed. It'll never work. And you follow about 8 to 10 of the ex-cons. Some make it, some don't. And, you know, I didn't really care for the manager guy, but I just think this is such a fun documentary, because the other ones are just not fun at all.
I didn't find this one fun. I actually found it to be a missed opportunity to tell the story better. The reason that the founder is running the show and believes in second chances and is, you know, creating this master class for these released prisoners to try and turn their lives around and have a shot at having a career at this restaurant. But that guy's story, his backstory, his motivations, you know, they hint at his troubled past and how he was able to overcome it and how he feels that he needs to help others in that situation. But I don't feel like they explained it all that well. I felt like they kind of sidestepped too many things. And I just didn't, I loved where the story was supposed to take me, but I did not find it to be constructed very well. And so I had, it just lost me a bit. I wanted more from it, and I did not particularly like the way that it was edited together.
See, all of those complaints I'll put on the other three we haven't talked about yet, because I just did not really care about Edith and Eddie, about Traffic Stop, and what was that other piece?
Heaven
garbage?
Is a traffic jam on the 405.
Lord. No, watching that documentary is a traffic
that
jam
was,
on the 405.
Oh, that was slow.
I don't want to even discuss. I don't know if we should or not. Well, I don't even feel like talking about those just, other three.
Heaven is a traffic jam on the 405. I was excited in the first 30 seconds because I thought it was going to be some fun documentary that like takes you back to like the opening scene of La La Land, where people are going to suddenly, you know, come out of this traffic jam and be singing and dancing on the highway. Doesn't happen. It turns out it's about some woman who's an artist who has major mental illness, but how she's sort of like got these two sides to her. She's kind of manic depressive and is on all kinds of medications and has had this terrible childhood and life. She's now in her 50s, and yet she creates, you know, this art.
Her art is pretty good.
Pretty renowned. And so it's just kind of how these two different sides of this woman, and how do you reconcile her artistic skills with the fact that she has really no life skills. But it was so slow.
I
couldn't wait for it to end. Edith and Eddie, you know, I have a soft spot for only because I met Edith and Eddie. And so, you know, they were married in 96 and 94, and then she got hauled off to Florida by one of her daughters, and then Eddie dies, and oh my gosh, it's a sad story.
Edith and Eddie takes a stand. Like, there's some straight up, villains named, like, first and last name over and over. We do not like you. But I don't even remember her name.
Jill or Julie.
But, oh, my good Lord.
But this one, I was shocked, actually, that it made it, that it got nominated. Because I do, while I really like the story, I know way more about the story.
Well, who's the big name behind it?
But Cher. Ah. Cher got wind of this couple's story, and she ended up kind of rallying to their cause. It was too late, but she's the one who then, she's an executive producer, so she helped bankroll this documentary. And so, I met the filmmaker. She, you know, was really just, her heart was in the right place. She loves this couple, too. Anybody who ever met Edith and Eddie, you can't help but just feel bad for how they were separated and how they got stuck in family dynamics of, I really think it all boiled down to money and inheritance and, you know.
She couldn't really have that big of an inheritance, by the way.
No, but when you have not, when you're like the kids who have very little and you're afraid that what you expected to get is going to somehow get, you know, revert now to somebody that your mother married when she was 96
and
she's
got
dementia.
Like almost accusatory, like the daughter who took it to Florida and the legal guardian were almost accused of murder.
But in some respects, I wouldn't go so far as murder, but there was definitely, I would say, potential negligence on the part of the guardianship that went on. And so I do think that Eddie's death was premature based on heartbreak from losing Edith. And I wish we knew more. I wish there was some follow-up to Edith's story in this. Like, what's the status really of Edith? Is she even aware of Eddie's passing and all that kind of stuff? So, but yeah, you're right. I don't put it ahead of any of these other ones. Traffic Stop, I think you're being a little harsh. I thought,
oh man,
Traffic Stop was one about it just takes this one incident that was caught on police dash cam video of the arrest of this woman in Texas, I think.
It's Austin, Texas.
And you just get this different perspective. You know, you would, if you just saw the video, you would think it was just maybe some strung out.
It's tough to watch because she, you know, she gets overly manhandled by the traffic cop, you know, who got her for speeding, and he body slams her to the ground, and it's just way too rough. And he's like, "There's no way you would have done that to a white person," and we all know it. And that's not the problem I have with it. That's the good part. We should be seeing this because what it alludes to and even calls out by name, Trayvon Martin and all the other recent African-American deaths by white cop. What my problem is, the other half, which is her dancing and her teaching class and like, what?
Well, no, but I think that's the whole point. That was the whole point of this entire movie, was to make you realize that you might have made some presumptions about who this woman was and why she was speeding and all these things. But then you go into her home life and you go back and you discover that she's a former model, she's a teacher, she's a dancer. And so it's really just about how you don't really get the full picture of people from a dash cam video. And it was interesting to me that they're trying to say, like, all cops aren't bad. You hear her, she's in the back of a car with a second cop.
And that guy's even worse.
And no, but that's the sad part, is that she thought he was the better one and she was feeling more comfortable with him. And then he says something so stupid and you are just like, oh man, another one.
There is a problem.
Doesn't get it. Yeah. There is a problem. So while I don't think this is the best presentation, and I agree that the two halves were not connected as well as they should be, I like what it was trying to do.
And this one, so right now you can watch Heroin, like right now. This one you'll be able to see pretty soon, right, on HBO. I think there's some dates we have to talk about. It airs February 19th, but if you have HBO Go, I think you can watch it early on the 16th.
Yeah. So, if I had to choose which of these shorts I think would the most deserving and likely to win, I would go with Heroine.
Absolutely. It's not even a competition. It is the best. It is the most well-made. It is, you mentioned timely, and it's just the biggest gut punch, which I want out of a doc short. Doc shorts are supposed to make you uncomfortable and make you just look at the world in a, oh my God, I can't believe we live here kind of way. And this is the one that does
it. This is the one that does it.
All right. You saw something very unique this week. It was like 9 o'clock in the morning, so you think you were the only person in the audience. What did you watch?
Yes, I watched a documentary called America's Musical Journey. And it was a special invitation to go see it in the humongous IMAX theater at the Air and Space Museum at the Smithsonian in Washington.
That's a big theater.
There were maybe four of us peppered across this humongous theater. I think I was in row 20 by myself just to have some perspective because it was just this, you know, the screen is so big. But this film was made specifically for a gigantic screen format. So it's not going to be everywhere, but it's going to be in scattered cities over the course of the year. And you can actually find, if you go to americasmusicaljourney.com, it lists the theaters where you can find this. But it's narrated by Morgan Freeman, which automatically gives it a little extra shot of gravitas.
It does.
But what it's really doing is it's following this Grammy-nominated singer-songwriter who I'd never heard of, unfortunately, called Allo Black. Do you know Allo Black?
I know Allo Black. I need a dollar.
So he was actually, I mean, his music was really good. It was like I learned something and I'm like, oh, I've never heard this guy's music that I know of. But what it does is it frames this whole documentary that kind of takes you through a journey across all of the iconic music cities in the U.S. Where New Orleans, Chicago, Nashville, Memphis, and Miami, and you're just learning about all these influences for jazz and blues and country and rock and roll, and how it's all infused by the by like immigrants. So it has like this pro-immigrant message that you realize that if immigrants hadn't come into each of these cities at different times, you wouldn't have the music, the same types of music that we have today. It's kind of bookended by Louis Armstrong and singing "What a Wonderful World." Which is, I mean, how can you not like a film? It's a 40-minute documentary that just brings the music to life and just takes you on this journey. I actually thought when I read the title, I thought America's Musical Journey. I thought it was going to be something about like tracing from Oklahoma and My Fair Lady up through Hamilton. Oh. So I thought it was about musicals. But no, it's really about music and the influences and it's one of those toe-tapping. It's just a fun little dip into all these different influences across all these different cities. And there's a flash mob dance that breaks out to one of his songs in Chicago that's fun to watch. And it does some amazing things visually. And so you see these incredible skyscapes. And then there's also this 3D technique where like the photographs kind of come to life. So from a visual and an audio perspective, if you're going to go into a museum and see one of those IMAX documentaries, this is a good one that just kind of helps pass time and is really cool to see. If it didn't have Morgan Freeman, I think they inserted Morgan Freeman around this whole thing to just give it added weight that it would otherwise never in a million years have had.
That does sound pretty good. To bring it back to the beginning, we saw different screenings of Black Panther. I saw it in a regular run-of-the-mill movie theater in two dimensions. You saw it at an IMAX screen in three dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
Was it worth it?
No. No, it really was not. I think there were times where I was tempted to just sort of, I wish I could just take off the 3D glasses. I did not feel after the fact, is it worth a big screen? Absolutely. You need to be somewhat immersed with a big screen. But the 3D aspect of it, there was never a point where I felt that the 3D was adding something to this movie. And so there are people who really don't like 3D to begin with. And so if you really prefer not to see something in 3D, you're not going to miss anything.
I don't feel like I missed anything at all. Even seeing it on the regular size screen that I did. You're not going to miss anything.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I do think bigger is better for this film. Well,
certainly.
But beyond that, no, 3D is not necessarily worth the extra $3 unless you just have kids who are obsessed with putting on the 3D glasses.
But the sound is worth the $3.
The sound was kind of cool, and it is a cool soundtrack, so you do get that extra little oomph out of seeing it in an IMAX theater. But overall, you're not going to feel cheated if you see it in a regular theater.
All right, well, to wrap it up, I think we both agree that Black Panther's pretty darn good.
And I think it's going to do pretty well.
Yeah, it'll make a buck or two. Early Man, I think you like it more than I do. I just think it's forgettable fluff.
It is forgettable fluff, but I don't see there's anything wrong with that once in a while.
Documentary Shorts, after you finish listening to this podcast, turn on Netflix and watch Heroin.
Yeah, it's probably the most timely and motivational of the bunch.
But Nice Skills is still up there.
I don't know.
And America's Musical Journey.
Yeah, you know, check it out if it comes to a museum IMAX theater near you.
All right. Well, thank you. And on behalf of the Cinema Clash, I am Charlie Jewell.
I'm Hannah Buchdahl.
Thank you.
Take care.
Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah is presented twice each weekend on RadioSt.Pete.com at 5:15 Eastern on Saturday and 9:15 on Sunday mornings. Cinema Clash with Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net. Listen again for Cinema Clash on RadioSt.Pete.com.